Welcome to the podcast. It's January 28th, 2010. I'm Dave Say, graphic designer.
I'm photographer Sid Caesar. Welcome to 2010, a new year full of possibility and all kinds of good stuff.
I'm already exhausted. I'm trying to figure out what to do. There's like there's all this stuff and things that are possible and people to talk to, places to go, things to build.
It's overwhelming, isn't it?
It is overwhelming.
We should just quit now.
Well.
That's it. We're done.
Okay. Yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah.
It would be nice. But what it comes down to is what I've decided is I need to focus on just a few things. Like, instead of focusing on everything, which is what I tend to do,
yep.
Just focus on three things at a time. I would say three or four, but I'm gonna hold myself to three.
At a time?
At a time. You know, so, for example, like, actually, I did choose four things. So, the four things are the design business. You know, be serious about that.
Yep.
The second is well-being.
Okay.
The third is...
Are you unwell?
Oh, you know, just generally taking care of myself, making sure I'm doing the bills, you know, doing chores, maintaining myself well.
I gotcha.
That's the idea.
I see.
The third one is collective. That's getting involved with other people's projects, being a part of things that are bigger than myself.
Yes.
Because I find that moves stuff forward. It keeps you from getting stale.
Yes.
You know, the fourth thing is Dave-ness.
Dave-ness?
Dave-ness. I mean, Dave-ness is, when you think about it, the unique qualities of yourself, like, are things that you can regard as curses or strengths. It's probably less stressful to think of them as strengths, as much as it's fun to like think of them as like oh, I can't do this because I didn't get a pony when I was a kid, or if only people respected me for what I was like inside, you know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of part of your uniqueness is, but you know it's not doing any good just sitting inside of yourself. Getting old, so I just bust that stuff out. I mean, it's like what you do. You take pictures all the time. You post them up on websites, your various Strobus meetup things.
Yep.
Being involved with the arts. And you've got a show going on now, or you're participating in the Love Lost. What's it called?
Love, Lust, and Desire. It is a Valentine's Day themed show. Being themed on either love or lust and or desire.
And which was yours?
I leave that open to interpretation.
Good answer. That was well done, dude.
So it's through McGowan Fine Art up in Concord. And there's an opening reception Friday?
This Friday?
February 5th from 5 to 7 p.m.
Okay.
You can see I was trying to remember that. The show is up. I think it starts February 2nd and it goes through February. Mm-hmm. And you can go to McGowanFineArt.com for the exhibit complete dates. And I can't remember the amount of people, but what it is as long as it fits in a 8.5 by 11 clear bag, and then they hang all the clear bags on the walls. And then as you buy them, they just take the pieces that you buy right off the wall, and then you can carry it out. So it's sort of an affordable art sale kind of thing. And it's nice. And this year, oh, my God, I think there's over 50 or 60 artists that are participating.
Nice. Is that an improvement and it's all, over last year?
I think there's more people.
Nice.
And all kinds of disciplines. It's 2D. There's some 3D. It seems like it's going to be really, really kind of cool. And it was nice last year in that it sort of attracts people that may or may not usually get to a gallery very often. So it's a good way to sort of break them into the gallery attendance kind of thing.
Yes, dear.
So it should be really nice. So I'm planning on going to the reception on the 5th, and it's just for a couple hours. We'll hang out, and hopefully all our friends will come and look at some good work and, you know, maybe buy their specific Valentine a gift of art. For Valentine's Day.
So that what's the average cost? Is there an average cost? It varies.
I think it varies. Some of them, I think there was things last year. I remember seeing stuff that were like $20-$25, and then some, you know, and then it sort of goes all over the map. So there is a price. I believe there is a price point for just about everybody.
Excellent.
Yeah. So yeah. So the opening is Friday, February 5th, from 5 to 7. For more information on that, just go to McGowan Fine Art, and that's McGowan Fine Art www.thefilmfestival.com, and it's right on Hills Ave. It's almost across from the Capital Center for the Arts in Concord.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
It's right next to, it's actually right across the street from where Brian Thomas plays a lot with his band. Right. Hermano's. It's across the street from Hermano's Restaurant in Concord.
Okay. It's across the street from Hermano's Restaurant.
Hermano's Restaurant.
Excellent. This is going to be tough to edit. So I can already tell.
Sorry.
That's okay. When I first started recording these podcasts, I thought we could just minimally edit these things and they'd be entirely listenable. And that's mostly been the case, but since the power of these editing tools have become more familiar to me,
yep,
I've started to, you know, smooth things out for listeners. So, like, the really bad, garbled, stumble-over-our-own-names moments,
yep,
like, I tend to edit out or smooth out just so people just don't get bored or lost or going, what the hell are they talking about?
Right.
So I should disclose that.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else is going on? Oh, I can talk about the workshop that I've got here, the guy from New York.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Yes. That all right. So there's another little point we can talk about. So February 20th and 21st is a Saturday and Sunday in February. I am going to be hosting a portrait and fashion photography workshop here at the studio. And we're bringing in a New York fashion photographer, Simon Garzina. His studio's in Brooklyn. He's from New York. He's worked on a lot of fashion type stuff. We're going to bring him in for the weekend. I'm going to host him here at the studio. And it's going to be sort of a 2-day intensive photography workshop. First day is going to cover basic studio lighting type stuff. And then the second day is going to be centered on high fashion. And we're still working out the specifics, but I believe he's going to try to bring in a professional model from the Boston area. And he's going to probably show a few different lighting scenarios on how to do with high fashion. And then I think some of it also be a sit-down Q&A where we can ask questions and he'll sort of educate us on how he works in the high fashion thing, yeah, and how model testing shooting goes and how to deal with modeling agencies, and probably comp cards and lookbooks and all that kind of stuff that is big in the fashion.
That's
photography
cool.
Industry. Yeah, so it should be really cool. So he's somebody that I met online, and we sort of developed an online rapport. He started doing these workshops out of his studio, and then a lot of people who couldn't exactly make it to New York City were asking about it. And so we just said, hey, why don't we, you know, give it a shot? So it's 2 days. It's February 20th and 21st. And if you need more information, you can email me. I put an event thing up on Facebook. And there's, I think it's currently half filled. So we still need about 5 people. I think we need around 10 to make it run. Mm. And I think we've got about 5 already reserved. So we need about 5 more people. So hopefully we can get that in the next few weeks. There's a couple of more places that we're going to send out email blasts to and see what we can do. So that'll be good. That'll be kind of nice to bring in a visiting professional photographer, and he can sort of share his experiences and hopefully people can, you know, leave at the end of the weekend with a little insight on more professional stuff.
Well, how much was it again?
It's $295.
Okay.
And that includes both days.
Both days. And there's a model there, too? Or?
Yeah, I think the first day for the stuff here in the studio, I think we're going to have my friend Vanessa come in.
Oh, cool.
And then on the second day, I think he's gonna hire a professional model from the Boston area. So part of that $295 will go towards, you know, modeling fees and that. So it should be pretty good. And I think he's going to structure it out so the class goes from about 10 to 6 on both days.
Okay.
So there'll be full days of shooting.
Nice.
I know he's going to structure it so that there's only one person shooting at a time. So there's not a lot of people trying to, you know, put cameras over each other's shoulders and steal shots and stuff. So I think it'll be structured really well. I think it'll be fun. I'm interested in having, you know, a lot more of these types of things. I'd like to bring this sort of stuff to the area. So we'll give it a shot and see how it works.
So why do you want to bring all these things to the area anyway?
It furthers my education. And if I can do it in a way that I don't have to pay a lot of money to travel, mm-hmm. these workshops if I can host them and bring them to me, and make it inviting enough for the visiting photographers to do it. You know, I think it's good. I see a lot of workshops that are done nationally, and usually New York is as far east as they go. And so there's not a lot of stuff that comes into the area.
And it's I think that with magic shows.
Is it really?
Yeah, like there was this time when I wanted to go see all these professional magicians. And like they never hit Boston, it seems. It's always Orlando or, you know, New York City. Yeah, but for some reason, there's this black hole of magic shows in
the Northeast always gets left out. But you know what's coming next year?
No, what?
Penny Arcade Expo is coming to Boston.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. PAX East. Penny Arcade is a online comic strip that's video game influenced.
Very, very popular.
They're very heavily video game fans, and they've started an exposition a few years ago where it's basically a lot of video game companies get together, and it's almost like E3, the Electronics Entertainment Expo that they have yearly out in Los Angeles. So all the developers get together and they show off their games, only this is geared towards fans, so where E3 is based on a trade show event.
Yeah, it's basically a selling show, and it became this entertainment extravaganza, which like the development teams could celebrate launching their product, and I've been to a few of them. It just kind of got out of hand.
It was excessive.
It
was excessive. I went for 10 years. I started going when it was still in Georgia.
Wow.
Before they moved it to Los Angeles. And it was so ridiculously over the top. I mean, there was so much money thrown at these events. It was just crazy. It was crazy. It was loud, and it was just all this lights and all these, you know, movie stars, and it was just ridiculous. And I stopped going because I got desensitized to it. And so like by the 10th year, it was just like I'd go, and then like within it's a 3-day event, and we'd stay for the 3 days. And by the end of the first day, I was like, okay, I've had enough. I give this year. I've had enough.
After a while, the stuff looked the same too.
It did, and a lot of times it was a lot of games that they were so early in development that it was like, well, what's the point of actually showing these games? Because a lot of the stuff. I remember when they were showing the first time we saw that they were making a Simpsons wrestling game, and it was literally like just a giant. It was like playing Adventure on the 2600. It was just these giant yellow squares that represented Simpsons. It was really early. And there was like no collision detection. It was a mess, and it was like so you can't.
Why would they show that?
I don't know. I think maybe they were just trying to get by on the Simpsons name and to get everybody, you know, psyched up. Although it is – every once in a while it's cool because what did I get? We got to play – 1 year we got to play the Dreamcast version of Half-Life, which never came out.
Interesting.
And they had it. It was all ready to be released. I think it was a final rev that we were playing. And another really cool thing, 1 year when the Nintendo 64 was out, the people that made – the James Bond game for the Nintendo 64, they made this kind of faux sequel called Perfect Dark. And they had at the time, they had this little camera thing that you could attach to your Nintendo 64 to take pictures. They had an app inside this new game where you could take a picture of your face and you could map your face on the multiplayer characters when you were playing. So at the demo, at the event, they were doing that. They would take a picture of your face and then they would graft your face on this character and then you'd see your... And then they got rid of it because I guess a lot of people were complaining. I'm sure parents didn't want people's fate. You know, like now you're actually killing somebody you know. And that must have been pretty creepy. I thought it was awesome. And then so they scrapped it, and it was like that was the only time I ever got to see that little feature that they took out. You know, and like here we are, like a decade later, and like these games still don't have that ability. So it's. It's very interesting.
That is interesting.
But I completely digressed on that. But anyway, so the PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo is coming to Boston next year, and I'm very excited that I don't have to fly to L.A. in order to bask in my nerdy video game goodness.
So next year, do you mean 2010 or do you mean 2011?
2010.
Okay, this year.
You can register online already.
Yeah.
And I think it's a 3-day event, and I think it's like $50 to register for the 3 days.
When is it?
That I don't know. I've forgotten.
Summer? Fall?
I think it's the summer. So we should probably just register and get it done and over with.
I don't think I want to go.
Why?
I'm old. I'm old.
Oh, you old cranky codger. You want to go.
Maybe I'll just go to see what it's like. I mean, I should at least do that. But, like, I just haven't been gaming and buying any new games.
You should.
It's like I don't have... This is how old I am. I am actually saying that I don't have time or interest in playing these games anymore. And, like, I never thought I'd say it. It's like the day when you decide, like, you know what? I don't want any more sugar.
What?
I know. I mean, it's crazy. I mean,
I could
go without sugar. I could go without all these things because, you know, I've had plenty of it. You know.
No, I don't believe that.
No, the day will come.
No,
the day will come.
No, it won't.
Yeah, it totally will.
No.
Either like your liver will fall out from all the sugar you've eaten already, or you'll just say, you know, I'm done. I just want savory barbecued things now.
No, I couldn't give up sugar.
Really?
No.
Yeah. So,
Cool.
So anyway, I totally segued you out of that the photo stuff.
Yeah. So what else is going on?
Let's see.
What have you been up to?
I've been trying to get a big picture view of my business aspirations. And by that, you know, I mentioned it a little earlier when talking about those four focus points. You know, the design business side of things. I've been doing that Agencium thing, which is the small client agency experiment.
Yeah.
And that's been interesting. And I've come to some conclusions about, like, what it takes to service clients that have, you know, very modest needs.
Yeah.
And the conclusion I'm coming to is that there are no modest needs. All the needs are important to that person at that time. You could judge them or rank them based on, like, the kind of projects that one's used to doing, like higher paying projects or larger scale projects for bigger companies. But the level of involvement and importance of those projects to the individuals who are having them done is just as high.
I mean,
it doesn't matter if you're like a $100 million corporation or like you're starting your business on $50.
Right.
I mean, it's really, really important. And the thing that I had to measure against is, like, you know, when I deal with someone who has that level of importance, I tend to react in kind. And, like, it can burn me out for relatively little revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, the part of the Agencium thing was, like, well, maybe what I can do is prepackage website designs, prepackage, like, certain solutions, so I don't have to research them every time, and then I could just, like, you basically check off a list and get a lot done for a little, like, additional effort. Because I've already pre-researched all this stuff and pre-written all the instructions.
Yep.
So that's going kind of to plan, but I can see it's going to take a lot of work to bring it to systemize it in such a way that it's like a good use of my time. Because the time I spend putting into this, although I'm learning a lot about like solutions for making inexpensive websites and inexpensive editing of websites, that's really one of the hang-ups.
Yeah.
How do you allow people to edit their custom websites and not have to learn HTML and not spend $100 to $500 on a piece of software?
Right.
And learn how to use it then, too. That's another big hurdle. But the time that I spend researching this stuff, it takes away from making other things, like new printable CEO forms, new software, things like that. I am collaborating with a couple people. Al Briggs, who's an iPhone developer in Germany, and Mary Wiseman, who's an instructional media designer somewhere in Western Mass, I think. They both approached me... seeing if we could collaborate on making some stuff. Hmm. And I was in a collaborative mood, and they seemed extremely professional and conscientious. So, like, I said, sure. And that seems to be going. It's good. I've been trying to open myself up more to that. But that also means I need to, like, carve out time and let go of certain controls and, like, control my ego. It's like, I want to make it all. It's all mine. Because, you know, this goes back to the collective focus. Like, working with other people, it's something that is essential. It's something that's necessary to have a good life. And that's something that I'm learning how to do. I'm used to, like, trying to do everything myself, trying to learn how to do everything myself, trying to be self-sufficient. But as they say, no man is an island.
That's right.
And well, you can be an island, but no one will want to visit.
Right.
Nothing there. So, that's generally what I have going on. Been talking to my friend Gary Constantine about this stuff too. It's like a really process oriented, like experienced, I guess I'd call him an industrial designer or process engineer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of international manufacturing experience. Also an artist. He sculpts stone. He used to restore cars. Like I met him through through a vintage Vespa like encounter at a coffee shop, and he liked my business card, and so we started talking. But yeah, he's been helping me focus also on like, yeah, what does it take to like get from this stage that I'm in now to actually creating stuff that will bring in revenue.
And yeah,
part of that is like finding associates, I think is the way he put it. Mm-hmm. You know, people to work with. So like you, I guess you and I, we're associates of each other. Like we're somehow involved in each other's like activities
right.
to move each other forward. So create more of that, and then our own local group, the collective, is part of that also. So yeah, but nothing's bringing in money yet. So that's the next immediate step. The first thing to do would be to actually re-outline the design services that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And actually put them on my website in a clear place that says you can contact me about
yes.
design. Here are my strengths. Here is what I've worked on before. Call this number. I am available during these times.
Call me.
I think part of me has been enjoying the downtime.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too much because I'm able to indulge a lot of these like questions of identity, what's important to me, and how do I achieve them. I've also been able to spend a little bit more time blogging, getting back into that.
Good.
So, but it's time to get back to work.
Yeah.
Time to forge some alliances, build some product, ship some wares, and get some money coming in. Because then for that, then I can start doing some other cool stuff, like buy an iPad when it comes available and design awesome forms for that. That would be cool.
I could, yeah, your forms I could see. Now, the iPad's touch screen, right?
Yep.
Now, does that also mean you could... you can write on it like you could like a Wacom tablet
or
something?
No, I don't think so.
So it only can do things like type touching?
It's a capacitive multi-touch surface. And I don't know actually how they're detecting points. I've never seen anyone use a stylus with an iPhone. Have you? Or an iPod Touch?
No.
Because it might... If it's capacitive, that means... It actually detects something electrical about the touch. The other kind of touch surface is based on something getting squished.
Okay,
it's like a compression based thing. So actually, I think that's a capacitive system too. If I could even pronounce it correctly,
capacitive.
Yeah.
So it's magic, basically.
It's basically magic.
It's Apple magic.
It's Apple magic. So I guess that's going on.
Good.
So, you can edit some of this stuff out.
Yeah.
What
happened? How are we on time?
I don't know. The thing just stopped.
Uh-oh.
We are at 25 minutes.
Oh. Is that enough stuff? Because we've got a lot of current event things that we just talked about.
Yeah.
So that could be kind of good to...
Yeah, we could just blast this as a short podcast.
Yeah.
Just like this.
Short ones are good.
So this is an announcement type podcast. Last week, we used Brian Thomas, who's one of the directors at Studio 99, the local music venue here in Nashua. He's a drummer, and so he made a cool percussion track, and we used that last week. I didn't actually have any any credits to record and play back, last time.
Yeah.
So we used his music uncredited.
Sorry, Brian.
So we're crediting you now.
So thank you to Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
For doing that. And make sure you catch Brian during his live performances at Studio 99.
Those are on Thursdays? That's his jazz jam night?
I think Thursdays? Yes.
Thursday he has his...
Jazz improv.
Okay. And then also a jazz night on one Wednesday out of the month.
Yes.
The jazz jams. All the Studio 99 jams are on Wednesday nights.
Yeah. Yeah, usually there's a bluegrass jam. But usually on Thursday nights he does an improv thing, and it's him, and usually it's a revolving cast, I guess you would say. And it's free to get in, and usually it's them just kind of messing around for a few hours, and people are free to go and listen and hang out. And,
right.
I think that's Thursday nights from like 7 to 9 that he does that. Very good guy.
Mm.
Very good musician. And then he also has his that backwards band that he's in.
That's his ensemble?
I think it's his ensemble band, yeah. And usually sometimes they perform like a Saturday night headliner. And it's him and another revolving group of people. And his band's called That Backwards. And it's like improv. Is it improv? It's like jazz, loose jazz kind of stuff.
Loose jazz.
But very good.
Oh, there are also like a couple new co-working scenes in the southern New Hampshire area.
That's right.
There's up in Manchester, there's the Archimedes space, which is part of Float Left Labs. Disclaimer, I am on their board of directors. Kelly is the founder of Float Left Labs, which is a nonprofit agency serving nonprofit organizations. She hires students at college so they can work for like, you know, some money. It's not like huge money, but get experience working on real projects for real nonprofits who often don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So she's targeting the ones that are like, I would say, medium-sized nonprofits.
Okay.
She's like working with a few places. Yeah. I probably shouldn't mention who they're working with. I don't know what their policy is.
Right.
But anyway, they have space with the Southern New Hampshire Planning Commission. I think that's what it's called, up in Dubuque Street in Manchester.
Huh.
And so the space that they have has like some sort of open plan cubicles, and so they have that space. And the idea is to turn that into a co-working space. And co-working, if you're not familiar with it, is the idea that if you're working at home all the time and you just want to work in a public place and be around other people who aren't necessarily part of your company, but still interesting to talk to, you can go and like rent some space at a co-working space, do your stuff, and have, you know, people to go to lunch with, people to talk over things. And it often is kind of an incubator and kind of like a social workplace
right.
thing. So it's good for freelancers who are stuck and stuff. So there's a number of plans that Float Left is working out for the co-working. But one thing they're starting up this Wednesday, or on Wednesdays, are Jelly Nights.
Jelly Nights.
And jellies are, they're kind of like co-working. You gather up a bunch of people who want to work together, and you all convene at one space, and you work. So, like, Elise McDonald down at Studio 99 started Jellies here in Nashua on Fridays, which run from, I believe, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it's, like, I think a $3, you know, money-in-the-hat donation. There's Wi-Fi. They have coffee machines, like, that vend. Well, they're not vending, but they should have coffee, and they have candy. And, like, up and down Main Street, there's all this, like, food you can eat,
right.
too, which is good. So they do those every Fridays, and I mentioned this to Kelly at our last board meeting for Float Left, and said, this is a good idea. Like, you should do something like this, too, just so people know at the space, because it takes a while for just the word to get known out there, and this is one of those situations in which a co-working space is as valuable as the people who are there co-working.
Right.
So it's going to take some time to ramp up.
Yeah.
And so we'll see where that goes.
Huh.
But anyway, so Southern New Hampshire has like two jelly/co-working venues now. So I'm just spreading the word, letting people know.
That's good. Now, you've been to the ones in Nashua, right?
The jellies?
Yep.
I went to the first or the second one two Fridays ago.
And how'd that go?
That was pretty cool. We all sat around a table. And we had our laptops. I was working on editing the last podcast there.
Mm-hmm.
Elise was doing something. So it was pretty cool.
Didn't somebody from New Hampshire Public Radio come
right,
down?
Yes, and- yes. His name was Avshay Artsy?
Artsy.
I believe. I think he's a producer for Word of Mouth. He popped in. There was also a photographer from the Nashua Telegraph that was there. That was taking pictures for an article, which I think Jen O'Callaghan wrote.
Okay.
In fact, I remember seeing the, I think I saw the online, there's a picture of my bloated head floating amongst the, everyone else, like at the, one of these folding tables that Elise had set up during their,
bloated head.
So, yeah, so it was neat. So I believe they were also, they had also mentioned the Float Left Labs, co-working space. So, yeah. So it's exciting. Like, you know, two of my favorite people in the area doing something to create more of the community.
Yeah.
Like, oh, one neat thing about the Wednesday Jellies up in Manchester is that it's combined with some of the other area social, nerdery, exciting things that Kelly and her husband Ian do. They have this geek lunch every Wednesday up in Manchester. So, like, area, the area, like, technologically inclined people, they gather for lunch. They're, you know, people that Kelly and Ian know or know through, like, the various places that they've worked.
Yeah.
And so, like, so that's part of it now. And then in the evenings, Kelly's, like, talking about having a build night. And the idea of a build night is that you go there and you learn something. You get to do something with your hands. So some of the ideas were to, like, create these dry erase marker boards that can read Wii controllers, like Nintendo Wii. So you can use, so basically you put electronics inside like an empty marker thing, and you point a Wii controller to it, and then it can pick up where it is on the board, and so it's like an electronic whiteboard.
Huh.
So you can actually draw on the wall like with a projector behind it. It's really
neat.
Oh,
wow. Okay.
So they're going to make these things and perhaps offer them to like area schools. And then also, I didn't know this. Kelly used to VJ back in college, so she used to VJ in New York, and
really?
So she wants to kind of bring it back on Wednesday nights and teach people how it works. And I've never seen it done before, so that'd be kind of exciting. So yeah, so there's another example: people creating stuff for other people to participate in.
That's really
like,
funny.
That goes beyond like I don't know. Let's go see a movie or whatever.
Not that there's anything wrong with movies.
No, not that there's anything wrong with movies, but can't waste your life watching them. Must make things.
No, you pretty much can.
you probably could. I guess so. If that's what you aspire to,
if
then
you,
go
if
for it.
You waste your whole life.
Yeah, you could. Like, you could complete all the quests on World of Warcraft.
There's a lot of people that are trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, someone did. It was like that guy from I think Taiwan actually, where my parents are from. You know, finish all however thousand quests that were in World of Warcraft.
Wow.
Yep.
That's crazy.
I couldn't even finish, like...
Did you play that?
Yeah, I used to play WoW.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I never did. I never got into...
You'd be hooked.
No, I'm not a... my one experience with ever trying to... When I was in grade school...
Grade school.
I had some... buddies that were really into role playing, and I tried. I was like, we went down to the public library after school one day, and I sat around, and everybody was rolling their stupid dice, trying to figure out what their whatever all their dexterity and crap was, and I could not, just couldn't get into it. And there's just, and I know specifically why, because there was this one guy, I can't even remember his name. He was a couple of grades above me, and he was friends with one of the other kids that came. And he just bugged the living crap out of me. And the entire time we were there, every time you tried to talk to him, the only time he would respond to you is if you called him by his Dungeons and Dragons name.
Which was?
Shadowstalker. And I remember he was this, like, I thought he was Asian. He was real tall, kind of Asian looking. He had glasses. And I remember, like, saying something to him. And he looked at me and he said, if you must address me, you will address me as Shadowstalker. And I was like... I'm done. I'm going home. That's it. Totally. Right, absolutely.
You can't judge like World of Warcraft based on.
But
like,
I couldn't
the terrible...
get into the whole like the thing with
There's
the thing.
No...
And then they're like, and then it's, you know, somebody's like telling you what's going on. And like, okay, you walk into a forest, and then a giant scarecrow with umbrellas jumps out at you, and they're like, "Oh my god, I'm going to attack!" And then everybody shuts up, and then they roll dice, and then they're like.
It's like all that.
And they're
stuff...
all just writing, and they're just sitting there. Everybody's quiet, and they're writing, and they're like. You hit 12.
No, you're gonna. No, you'd be hooked. You would
just,
be hooked.
No.
Because all that stuff's gone. All you do is you're walking around this gigantic world, like it has like that. That's amazing looking. It's a little bit low resolution, but like it runs fast on like a unreasonable hardware, which is like you know one of our design goals. And all that dice rolling that happens behind the scene, you just concentrate on hitting stuff, like casting your spells or talking to your buds. And, like, it actually could be quite compelling.
Really?
And you actually can if you like that kind of stuff. I'm like, and I think I think
I can do you action. Might get into the, it. The most I ever got into anything like that was the Zelda games are pretty much as far as I get with role playing, because even there you could equip stuff and that kind of thing.
I can't stand Zelda.
What? Oh.
I just, you know, like this thing you're talking about, like you all dress me as Shadowstalk, now we roll a little dice and look at our papers.
Yeah.
Same thing with these Zelda games. You're pressing the button, read the story, read the press A, and you try to get past it. You miss any of it. Like, it's like you're missing like the wonderfully in depth story that's going by. But really, it's just, I just want that boomerang thing. I want to hit people with it.
I will pretend that you didn't insult. Although that's not true, because I did get into Animal Crossing.
Oh no!
That game owned me. I think that is the most. And Sarah got yep. Wicked, but we got it for the GameCube, and we literally played every day for 365 days, and then we had to stop. We had to stop. Like we had to force ourselves to stop because it would get to the weekends, and Sarah would spend 4 hours writing letters to her little animal neighbors, and then like the deal was is that you'd write them a letter, and then if they liked the letter, they would mail you back a piece of furniture that would go with a certain theme. Yep. And so she'd spend like all of Saturday writing letters and getting furniture pieces and then rearranging. That was the most obsessive compulsive game I've ever played. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and it was great because like on certain holidays, like everything was related to real life. So you'd have, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff. And then on those specific days, certain people would show up and you could get certain themed Christmas furniture and stuff. No. I remember one that year we were at Sarah's parents for Thanksgiving. We had brought the GameCube. It was hooked up downstairs. And every time we weren't eating, we were downstairs trying to hunt down this stupid chicken, turkey. We were hunting down this stupid turkey to get, and every time you catch him, he would give you a piece of Thanksgiving Day themed furniture. And, I never played a game as much as I played this game, and it was so mundane because it was I'd get up and I'd go and I'd go and check my mailbox and then I'd go and I'd like pull weeds out of the ground and I'd plant flowers and I'd go fishing and it was just obsessive. And then I would like I'd get mad when certain little characters would move away because they'd come people would come and move and stuff and there were certain little ones like I'd find out, you know, like we had this little cat who had a head like an orange. And he was there for a long time, and I remember, like, he'd be the first person that I would go and see, you know, like, out of all the villagers, I'd go and visit that one. And then, like, one day, he just sent the letter, and he moved away. And I was so mad. I was like, oh, how could you leave? Terrible. And then, so we stopped. I forced myself to stop.
That was the last straw.
Yeah, well, no. When we got to the end of the, like, a full year circle, I was like, we have, because it's just so obsessive. And then I was good up until they came out with the DS version, and then I started getting sucked back into that.
My sister gave me a DS and Animal Crossing.
And I had to quit that, too, because it was the same thing. And that one, they cheesed that a little bit because they got rid of like the furniture. They got rid of the holidays and all that. That sort of made it kind of exciting. So I didn't really get into that one. The GameCube one, though, I was obsessed over. So I stopped, and the last time I had hooked up my GameCube, I turned it on just to see what was going on. And it was I felt like it was horrible. The entire village was completely overgrown with weeds.
Yep.
And like all my flowers were dead. And I walked around a little bit. And one of the villagers saw me. And he comes running over. And he starts yelling at me. And he's just like, yeah. Like he comes over. And he's like these little like things are coming out of his head. Like little anger things. Yeah. And I clicked on it. And he was like, where have you been for the last 2 years? I'm so, oh my God. Everybody. And I felt so horrible. I just shut it off. I turned the power off.
Terrible game.
I did. I felt so guilty. I was like, oh my God. Like they're all dead. And I was just like, ah. And I just ran away from it. I haven't touched it since.
Wow.
Sorry.
Someday they'll make a Western about this.
That was...
I think they have. I think it was called Shane, wasn't it? Shane, where'd you go, Shane? You went away. You left all our flowers are dead. All those weeds.
Oh, it was horrible. So that was the one, like, most obsessive game ever. Ever.
Yep.
So I try not to think about that game anymore, because it's like, if they ever came out with something... If they ever came out with a new version.
The MMORPG version of Animal Crossing. Can you imagine that? 3D, first person with all your friends on one server, exploring a world without boundary.
I just thought it was great, you know? Yeah. So that might have been like a an entry level into role-playing
games. I'm excited about the Star Trek Online game. I shouldn't be. I mean, I became aware of it when Gideon Mayu, who was like, he's one of the guys in Icon Factory, like he tweeted something about it, and I said, "Oh, there's a new Star Trek game." And I went to look at it because, like, I know Ged's like a huge Star Trek fan, and like he his taste too about his Star Trek fan moments. So, so I went and went looked at it, and it was really through. And then I got to the part where it described like all the ships that you get to command.
Yeah,
and I went, "Oh," and plus, like, I like the J.J. Abrams like Star Trek movie, so. And like I forget where this one fit in the continuity, but this thing's going to power save. Oh crap! Anyway, it looked cool. Star Trek Online. That was kind of Star Trek Online looked interesting to me.
Yeah,
I may try that.
I had heard that they were planning on making a MMO that was based on the Firefly universe.
Yeah, did that come out?
I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about it.
Yeah,
I remember thinking, hey, that would be kind of cool.
I think that did come out.
Or
there was some announcement I remember reading about it, but it was either canceled or it didn't fly or... Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be really difficult to keep moving.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the backing and the content creation side of things. Because what would you do in the Firefly universe?
You'd be like cowboys.
Yeah. I mean, you go and...
You visit places.
I mean, it'd be like basically another...
Get chased by the Alliance.
Yeah, you could get chased by... You could be Alliance, or you could get chased by Alliance, or you could, like, you know, try to outrun the Reavers. I don't know. It would be really kind of a style thing. I don't see it having the momentum to keep itself going.
The chutzpah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Star Trek Online, I'm hoping, like, is cool, because, like, I'll have to try it out. One of these times, maybe when a free trial comes around, it launches on February 2nd. Yeah,
not that you're counting down the days or anything.
No, not at all, not at all. It's one because one last thing I want to do is like install a 9 gigabyte like game on my computer off the internet.
Right.
That's and then wait for it or buy the game and wait for it to patch. It takes a day and a half, and then you get online and you know don't know what to do, but I don't know. It's from Cryptic Studios, who did City of Heroes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think. Which I've heard good things about. I haven't played it. But it means that they have a few games under their belt, so like their interface probably won't suck ass. And it will probably be a pretty good experience. Plus, like World of Warcraft has set a certain standard for like ease of use, I think. That all new MMO RPGs have to...
Adhere to.
Yeah, because otherwise they're just like people. Just like, why am I going to deal with this? And just go back.
Right. That's funny.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So I think they're going to cut. This is already 47 minutes. So
okay, cut it.
We'll cut it down to a clean 20 minutes.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's going to wrap it up for this time. I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm designer Dave Say.
And we will talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye. On that, just go to McGowan Fine Art, and that's MG
MC
MC. See, she like MC. Wait, what was that?
MCGOWAN
MCWO. Wait, I've completely had a spell.